The whole principle of naval fighting is to be free to go anywhere with every damn thing the Navy possesses.
Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. It is Tuesday, January 14th, 2020. This is episode 63. We got a few things to talk about this week. Not much new announcement-wise. There's some preview-y stuff and whatnot. But we'll get into all the goodies here. Got some previews about Psychic Awakening, some pre-order news. I actually got some big personal event-wise stuff. Still nerdy shit, not like super personal, like I took a big shit this morning or anything like that. I mean, maybe I did, maybe I didn't. Now you'll never know. But you can message me directly if you're really curious. You can just message me through the Facebook page there. But we'll get into all that. Starting off as far as what's going on in my neck of the woods. No new gaming stuff. Not directly. I did pick up Aether War today. I had pre-ordered from back when the pre-order started. And already bought, paid for, and whatnot. So just went and had to go pick it up. Would have picked it up over the weekend, but the weather was shit. So that didn't happen. Unfortunately. And then Sunday night, my car was already acting funky, and it continued to act funky, so I had to take it in to get it repaired yesterday, so yay! Admittedly, so far, 2020 is just, it seems to just be determined to be a big, giant kick in the pants. I'm not gonna let it slow me down, though. Between last week getting bad news on the job front there, that bunch of the hours and income was gonna go, but then getting like an $800 repair bill yesterday was like, oh, this is fucking sweet. So, don't know how many more box sets I'll be able to pick up in the near future unless something changes, unfortunately. But like I said, this one was already bought, paid for before all this bad garbage started happening. So it is what it is. I'm irresponsible, but I'm not that irresponsible. So, beyond that, like I said, I do have some stuff I want to discuss as far as some personal gaming stuff later on in the episode. So you'll have to stay tuned for that. But it is a big announcement, so definitely recommend listening to the episode. I recommend you listen to every episode I do because that's why I'm doing this. Otherwise, it'd be kind of fucking pointless, I guess, to a degree. Although then again, just screaming into the internet is kind of fun to in its own manner. But beyond that, didn't get any real new gaming, done or anything like that, unfortunately. I'm definitely going to be getting some in here very shortly, though. Once again, kind of related to the big news. I promise I will get to it, but I'll probably several times. And then, oh wait, big news. It's not intentional, though. I'm not trying to be a complete cock tease here. I'm just being, straight with you on it. So let's get into the newsy news things here. We'll start off with pre-order stuff. So we have both pre-orders that are currently available as well as preview pre-orders for stuff that's coming pre-orderable this coming weekend, which would be Saturday the 18th. And then the current stuff that's pre-orderable right now obviously should be out on the 18th. So, stuff that's coming out this weekend, we kind of went over it a little bit last week. Codex Adeptus Sororitas, the data cards and those magnificently shit-ass dice, are all going to be available, to purchase this Saturday. Currently, you can pre-order them though. God, I really wish that this whole job and car thing hadn't happened, though. I really want to get some more sisters so badly. These new multi-part kits look fucking sick. But it is what it is. Right now we've got the available for pre-order purchase this weekend. the Adeptus Sororitas Battle Sister Squad, which will let you either build the standard Battle Sister Squad, the Celestians, or the Dominions. So it's a 3-in-1 kit, which is kind of cool. Admittedly, now that I think about it, I actually have not looked up the price. I should look up the price on that right now, though, given the fact that it's going to be probably a fairly large kit, I would envision. It's a $60 squad, so actually less than I was expecting, to be perfectly honest, considering it's supposed to be buildable as any of the three. I would assume that there's probably some extra bits and pieces so you can make them a little more Celestian or a little more Dominion, sort of jazzaroos. Let's see here. I'm actually kind of curious now. Let's go through this. Opponents, chainsword, power sword, choice of ranged weapons, condemner bolt gun, combat weapon, 179 plastic components. It doesn't really go into specifics as far as what's all included, but that just makes me inclined to think, because it even says special weapons, storm bolter, melt gun, or flamer, or she can carry a heavy bolter or a heavy flamer. I will bet you that there is one storm bolter, one melted gun, one flamer, one heavy bolter, and one heavy flamer in the box. Unfortunately, I'm hoping that they may be throwing like an extra storm bolter or an extra heavy bolter or something. Well, throwing the extra heavy bolter wouldn't make sense because this isn't the Retributor Squad, but that's available for pre-order too. So the Retributor Squad will be $55 or whatever fun Monopoly money you use in your area you'll want to check. But here in the States, where we use good old dollar roonies, $55. So, or $55 roonies if I want to stick with the theme. Anywho, but yeah, the Retributor Squad is available. There's also the Triumph of St. Catherine is available for pre-order as well. That'll be $110 roonies. So, but God, what a badass. Just an absolute badass model. All of these models really are very impressive in their own right. There's very little that they've shown off so far that hasn't blown my fucking mind with the sisters kits. So, but yeah, so that's all pre-orderable right now. And then this weekend, there will be some more sister stuff pre-orderable. The Penitent Engine kit, which includes two Penitent Engines. The Arcoflagellants, which I believe is 10 Arcoflagellants that come in a box. And then they will also have the Exorcist, the Hospitaller, Judith, Aruda Buddha, Fruta Nuda, whatever Duda she is. Those will all be available for pre-order. But yeah, so, now that I think about it, yes, the Exorcist, but I don't see the Immolator or anything, so there's gotta be another week of this shit coming soon. And also the new Ritual of the Damned Psychic Awakening book will be pre-orderable. Then that's got the Dark Angels, Grey Knights, and Thousand Suns vying off in that. So, they're also going to have the new Master Lazarus Primaris Captain model, which I think is probably one of the most boring Primaris Captain type models that GW's put out yet. I do like the fact, I will say that it is nice that since it is like a multi-part kit, he doesn't just have to be Lazarus. This is the one thing that I'm like, all right, I can forgive some modicum of what I consider a rather flat model overall, is the fact that he can be just built as a generic captain too, generic Primaris captain, that is. So I kind of get where it might be a little bit of a simpler character model then, because it's designed to be able to be built as a not character, you know, real not named character. You know what I fucking mean. So it makes some sense, but I still, overall, I'm like, eh. Mephiston was multi-part, but he was still really badass. But he also couldn't just be assembled as a generic, you know, Primaris captain-y type dude or whatever. So it makes some sense. I get it. But yeah, so that'll all be available for pre-order starting this weekend. Yeah, and with that, we're going to get into the preview-y type stuff as far as that book goes here in a bit. In other news, if you happen to live near a Target, you can go get the Space Marine Adventures box set now. I shouldn't say box set. It's a board game. It's a board game. It does have models. They're just from like that Space Marine Heroes range. But yeah, so it does have some models that you can paint up and stuff if you want. But yeah, if you're just looking for something that's just like, you know, if you're a big fan of the Warhammer-related products, you know, board games and such like that, this is something you can pick up. Also, too, if you're just looking to maybe get friends or family into the game in some capacity, but they're like really like, eh, I don't want to play with the nerdy toys and everything else, but if they will play board games, you know, there you go. There's something you can use to maybe get that, get the wheels greased a little bit. That's available at Target. So cool. I still feel weird about, to some degree, I thought, you know, years ago, I'd be super excited if GW products started becoming available in other, you know, in more mainstream, places. I got mixed feelings about it because I do feel like to some degree it is kind of abandoning the roots to a degree. But, you know, God, there's this phrase my dad has used all the fucking time. Creative destruction, I think, is what he calls it. It's like an economics thing, whatever. Look it up. Anyway, the point is that, you know, sometimes, you know, a lot of people will try to fight against change or whatever else because it's going to destroy things. Sometimes you got to destroy things to get new creative things. The same thing applies to like competition and whatnot. A lot of people might think competition is some sort of bad thing because, you know, you're that company you're super loyal to will start losing business because of competitors. But realistically speaking, that actually, you know, invites them to innovate, you know, which is something we've seen from Games Workshop specifically, having, like, the Chapter House thing years ago, which, admittedly, they blunderly, you know, they blundered and fucked up so fucking bad in so many ways, but it led to really good things. It led to a more transparent company. It led to a company going, oh, well, let's not write rules for things that we don't make, but we want to make sure that people can play our games, so we're just going to have to make a shit ton more models. So it's worked out in so many ways, actually, in the long run. You know, and a lot of people talk about the 3D printing thing too, that GW is going to go out of business because 3D printing, blah, blah, blah. No, I think the business model may have to change eventually. I don't see it going out of business though. At the end of the day, so far, all the 3D printed stuff I've seen, they're great. They're cool. None of them seem to, at least that I've personally seen, none of them have come close to the quality and you know, just the visual fidelity of the official Games Workshop products. So the idea that, oh, they're gonna be fucking dead because nobody's gonna want to buy it because you could just buy a cheap ass printer and, you know, print out a model. Okay, yeah, that lets you play the game, but I could just as easily pick up some pieces of cardboard and write the word Space Marine on it and stand it up on another piece of cardboard, you know, glue it down like a base. And boom, there we go, I got Space Marines. You know, this is the same fucking effect. Okay, maybe we were like, well, at least it looks like a Space Marine. Okay, fine, I'll print off a picture of a Space Marine and glue it to the front of my piece of cardboard. You know, there's a lot of different ways you could argue about it all goddamn day long. But at the end of the day, the official product is the official product. End of story. So, but yeah, so moving on here, though. There was something actually posted today on the rumor engine that's got some people interested. It kind of looks like an ogre gut plate at first until you look closer and you can see that it's got a shield on top of it. Like, and some skulls too. So this looks like it should be a rather large plate. Now, that doesn't mean it's not a gut plate for an ogre, because ogres can still be pretty big, but usually, like, a gut plate is just, like, a standard, you know, more humanoid-sized shield that they just use to cover up their bellies, but this thing's fucking huge. It's got a shield on top of it, so there's a lot of signs pointing to the rumors regarding the fucking... Oh, fuck. What do you call it? Giants. Jesus Christ. You'd think the word giant would not be that fucking hard. But apparently it is for me. So, but whatever. The point is that that's kind of the direction that's pointing. So, yeah. So, kind of cool. We'll have to see, of course. And then lastly, before we get into any preview-y stuff, digital game-wise, now for certain, I don't know if I've mentioned it or not, it's been out for a little bit of time, but Total War Warhammer 2 does have some new DLC that adds on, the Clan Eshin to the Skaven, and, oh god, I can't even think of the dude's name right now. Let me just find it here quick. There it is. Shadow and the Blade. Yeah, this came out a month ago now, admittedly, but I don't remember if we talked about it or not before. Not just, you know, with the holidays and everything, but yeah. So, also, Malice Darkblade, for the, Dark Elves is a playable lord with the, you know, his own empire and everything else. So, looks like a lot of cool shit, that they've added in new units and everything else. So, looks really cool. I haven't gotten a chance to try it myself. If anybody else has, you know, feel free to, drop a message there or whatever on the Facebook page and let me know what you think about it, because I really want to get it, but, you know, just haven't gotten around to it, and money sucks. So, but yeah, and then the other thing in digital stuff, is the, Age of Sigmar Realm War got a big update. For the, it's a mobile game, for those who are unfamiliar. I haven't tried it since the new update, namely because, I'm not gonna lie, I really hated it when it first came out anyways. Like, I really thought it was trash. A lot of people love it. I think it's a garbage, boring-ass piece of shit game. But that's kind of my, because it's not my type of, admittedly, it's a big part of it because I hate that type of game. It's like this weird cross of a MOBA and some other stuff, and I absolutely despise MOBAs. I think they are so fucking boring. I just don't like them. I really don't. I have tried so many times. I get bored so rapidly with them. I really am hoping they announced sometime last year, Focus Home, Interactive has like their whole Warhammer IP thing. They have an Age of Sigmar game supposedly in the works, that's being worked on by guys from like Relic Entertainment and shit, if I remember correctly. Same guys who made Dawn of War. So, fingers crossed we get a quality Age of Sigmar strategy game, but we'll have to wait. Time will tell. So, but, gonna take a quick little break. When we come back from the break, we're going to go over the Ritual of the Damned preview items. We're going to talk a little bit about, might do it before the next break or not. Also at some point we'll be talking about the, next, or that Aether War box set, and, you know, some AOS related things, and then big news eventually. So stay tuned.
You're listening to the Regimental Vox. Follow the Regimental Vox on social media by going to facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast or on Twitter at Regimental Vox. Like what you're hearing? You can help support the show for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/theRegimentalVox today.
Welcome back to the Regimental Vox. As I mentioned before the break, I was going to go over the new preview-y type stuff for the Ritual of the Damned. They've only got 2/3 of the previews, at least I would assume there's another preview incoming for the Dark Angels. But we do have one for the Grey Knights and a little bit for the Thousand Suns as well. So let's get into it here. So for starters, with the Grey Knights, they obviously go into some of like the lorey bits and whatnot. Lorey? Like as in a vehicle or as in a woman? No, I mean lore, L-O-R-E, bits and... lore-y bits. Anyway, fuck it. Moving on. You know, it starts off with a little bit of that, followed by some little bonuses and whatnot here, rules-wise. Let's see here. So, they have the new Masters of the Warp rule, It's basically a replacement for the doctrines like that other Space Marine chapters have. And then you could choose one of four different tides, as they call them, to be dominant during the game. The entire army gets a bonus. And they show off the four different tides here. First, we have Tide of Fury. Whilst this tide is dominant, when resolving an attack made with a nemesis weapon by an infantry model with this ability, you can reroll a wound roll of one. Once again, anything that affects your wound rolls in a positive manner is definitely a good thing. Rerolling wound roll of one is not as big of a deal, but it's still a nice thing to have. Tide of Convergence. Whilst this tide is dominant, add one to the strength and damage characteristics of psi weapons that infantry models with this ability are equipped with. Yeah, this is okay. You know, boosting your damage characteristic is nice, you know, for sure. Adding one to the strength is generally not as big of a deal, unfortunately. Although, if you are going to be battling a lot of psychers, they're probably going to be mostly characters, multi-wound, you know, so having the extra damage is nice. A lot of them are going to be lower toughness probably anyways, a lot of toughness 3 and 4, so adding one to the strength of your psi weapons probably on, I admittedly I'm not entirely familiar with all of the rules for Grey Knight specifically, but a lot of them are probably strength 4 by default, so you're looking at doing a lot of wounding, a lot more wounds on 3s against, you know, toughness 4 psychers. Once again, that's just educated guesswork there, but so it's okay. Tide of Shadows. Whilst this tide is dominant, a unit with this ability receives the benefit of cover to its saving throw, even while it's not entirely on or within a terrain feature. When resolving an attack made with a ranged weapon against the unit with this ability while it's entirely on or within a terrain feature, subtract one from the hit roll. So, kind of the new dealio, like Raven Guard-y type stuff. You're seeing this kind of, they're kind of replacing the whole negative one to hit thing for many armies with more of this if in terrain or near terrain, you get these bonuses instead sort of thing. And if you're not, you still get a cover save. We're seeing a lot of that, which is nice because the general neg one to hit on everything is kind of a pain in the ass. Even if it's the everything beyond 12 inches thing, could still be kind of a pain in the ass. This actually makes it a little more strategic for both players. And then we have Tide of Escalation. Whilst this tide is dominant, when a unit with this ability and the Rites of Banishment ability manifests the Smite psychic power, and it is not resisted, that power inflicts one additional mortal wound on the target. You know, especially in an army that can just spam the shit out of Smite, that's actually pretty nice to have, so... and you can change the active tide by using the warp shaping psychic power. So there is, six new powers, part of the Dominus discipline. So you can choose from that instead of the Sanctic discipline. But yeah, so you start the game with one of the tides, but if you want to change it and you have somebody with the warp shaping psychic power, boom, there you go. And then we have, another power, Empyrean Domination. It has a warp charge value of 7. If manifested, you gain 1 command point. That's kind of nice to just, you know, there's no, you know, crazy weird doing this or doing that or having to kill that dude and spend that stratagem and do this other bullshit. It's just cast a power, get a point. Especially in an army that is notoriously very expensive points-wise, overcosted. I mean, I know they've made a ton of cuts in, on the points for this army because of its poor performance. But yeah, more expensive armies do tend to just have less command points because they can't put out as many detachments and stuff and as many models as other armies. So, that's kind of nice. I think that's a nice, addition. And they do have a new stratagem to help you with manifesting powers as well called Empyrean Surge for 1 CP. Using your psychic phase after a psyker, unit from your army has manifested a Grey Knight psyker unit, from your army has manifested a psychic power until the end of that phase when a psychic test is taken for a friendly Grey Knight psyker unit within 6 inches of that unit, add one to the total. So, that's nice. It does require you to successfully get one psychic power off first, and then all the other psychic units around him. So the guy that you actually cast this command or the stratagem on doesn't get to take advantage of it. Well, that's not entirely true. If he can cast more than one, as long as he's done at least one, then he can take advantage of it because he'd be within his own bubble. But if you're limited to only casting one, then yeah, you're probably better served having somebody who can cast multiple powers first. It's not a requirement by any stretch, but that way you can maximize efficiency with it. If you have somebody that can only get one power off and, yeah, if they are successful, cool. You know, then you can add one to the total of everyone else around them. But if you got somebody who can do two or more, admittedly, I don't know how many can do more than two in a turn. But then you can, you know, get up first power, maybe pick an easier power or something like that. But, you know, obviously you want to be efficient about your power usage, though, too. Don't just use the easier power just because it's easier. But that way he can also take advantage of the surge on a more difficult power, as well as everyone else around him. So, let's see here. And then they have a new relic that they show off, Stave of Supremacy, model with Nemesis Warding Stave only. When a psychic test is taken for an enemy model within 18 inches of a model with this relic, that enemy model suffers Perils of the Warp on any roll of a double. So that's, you know, that's overall nice that even if somebody doesn't successfully get their power off or whatever, if they roll a double, they're still getting the Perils of the Warp. And, you know, just it definitely may all make somebody think twice about getting too close. So you can use it as a deterrent to keep psychers away from certain areas. And especially since a lot of psychic powers are 18 inches or less, too, it particularly would deter them from whoever's carrying that, from them going after that person specifically. But it's nice. Obviously, it's not like a crazy thing as far as, you know, it doesn't do direct damage or anything like that. But like I said, this is definitely a really good deterrent. And then we also have a litany for their chaplains. They got new litanies altogether. One that they showed up here, Recitation of Projection. If this litany is inspiring, select one friendly Grey Knight unit within 6 inches of the model. Add 6 inches to the range characteristic of bolt weapons and psi weapons models in that unit are equipped with. That's pretty cool, actually. If you're primarily looking to, you know, if you're trying to stay at range more than anything else, it's nice. But the, you know, Grey Knights, given all the Nemesis weapons and everything else, you're probably looking to generally get closer to people anyway. And also so you can get off your smites and all that other jazz. So adding extra range to your bolt weapons and psi weapons, it's not typically going to be as big of a deal. Although, once again, my understanding of Grey Knight's rules is a little weak. So your bolt weapons probably won't take advantage of it as much. But psi weapons, I don't know what the ranges are on a lot of their psi weapons, admittedly. But yeah, unless you've got a bunch of stuff that's 12 inches or less, you're probably not going to care all that often. Because once again, being Grey Knights, being able to do the multi-smite thing and everything, you're going to want to get closer, generally speaking, to your foe, not, you know, to maximize your damage output, not keep your foe completely at bay. Now, if you're going up against an army that, you know, is a little bit more horde light infantry, like Tyranids, for example, that's really going to want to get up in your shit. Okay, fine. You know, that's useful then, in those regards, but otherwise it's okay. Then we've got the Thousand Suns faction focus. Once again, starts off with the lore. But what's kind of cool is that they, in the lore, from before the Thousand Suns fell to chaos and stuff, there was the multiple cults. Basically, there were different cults in the Thousand Suns, force, and then they kind of carried this over into the Thousand Suns for 40K here. But We've got different cults. There's prophecy, time, mutation, scheming, magic, knowledge, change, duplicity, and manipulation. So 9 total to choose from. They don't show off all 9 here, obviously. But first we've got the Cult of Time, which gives you psychic power, time flux. It has a warp charge value of 5, so pretty low, you know, a pretty low requirement. If manifested, select one friendly Cult of Time infantry unit within 6 inches of a psyker. You can return one destroyed model from that unit to the battlefield with all of its wounds remaining, placing it in unit coherency. If the unmodified result of the psychic test was 9+, you can instead return up to D3 destroyed models from that unit to the battlefield with all of their wounds remaining, placing them in unit coherency. So this is pretty nice overall. A really cheap power to get off. And while getting the bonus out of it does require quite a bit more, you know, luck, being able to possibly get up to 3 destroyed models for that unit back on the battlefield is rather nice. And plus with the whole multi-wound, you know, that is, it's full wounds. You know, how many, right off the top of my head, I don't know how many units in the Thousand Suns have, you know, multi-wound models in them. But if you do, this is better than a lot of other healing powers or capabilities. A lot of others just, you know, you can bring back one guy with one wound left on him. This one can, you know, not only give at least one guy full wounds back, but can bring back many models even. So, potentially. So, pretty good power, I think, overall. Then we've got the Cult of Duplicity, which they showed up a Warlord trait for this one. Duplicitous Tactician. At the start of the first battle round, before the first turn begins, select up to D3 Cult of Duplicity units from your army. Remove those units and this Warlord from the battlefield, then set them up again, following the normal deployment rules for those units of the mission being played. If you redeploy a transport model, all units embarked inside that model remain so when it is set up again. So kind of like the Deceiver and stuff like that, it gives you an option to basically fuck with your opponent's battle plan, which is nice if your opponent set up everything specifically to counter, you know, specific units. You can use this to bounce them around. Now, it's D3 units, so that's the one thing, is that it's a little wishy-washy. You know, your opponent might have everything set up to really crank out a lot of damage on, you know, a good handful of your units, but you got a bunch of others all lined up that are now not in danger. You might roll really poorly, though, and can only move one of those units, and the Warlord, in which case you got a couple units still hanging out being sacrificed. But still, being able to once again mess with your opponent's plan is good. Then we've got the Cult of Change. They showed off a relic for that, or as they call it, a Sorceress Arcana. The Capricious Crest. It's a helm. Once per turn, when a psychic test is taken for a model within 18 inches of a model with this relic, you can change the result of that psychic test as follows. If that model is from your army, you can change any roll of 1 to a roll of 6. And if that model is from your opponent's army, you can change any roll of 6 to a 1. This could have some very potentially strong power to it. Unfortunately, it doesn't affect any rolls of 2 through 5 in either case. But, I mean, typically if your opponent's rolling 2s, you're not going to care. But if you're rolling 2s, you're going to really give a shit. So, it's okay. Without knowing, once again, and that's a big thing to keep in mind with all these previews, without knowing once again what everything else is available, it's kind of hard to, you know, compare these directly, especially since, you know, one shows off a psychic power, one shows off a Warlord trait, one shows off an Arcana. I'm assuming that all of them have their own psychic powers and Warlord traits and so on and so forth. So it's hard to say entirely, once again, in a vacuum, as to what would be the better choice. Then we've got the a host of new stratagems for any Thousand Suns army. They show off Risen Rubricate for 1 CP. Use it when you set up a Rubric Marines army from your army during deployment. Rubric Marines unit, excuse me, from your army during deployment. That unit can be set up anywhere on the battlefield that's more than 9 inches from the enemy deployment zone and any enemy model. You could only use this strategy once per battle. So, on the one hand, being able to deploy, you know, units that normally could not deep strike up near your enemy can be scary. And a lot of units, like I've used Nurglings before, for example, to really fuck with somebody's plan by being able to deploy them up front. You know, that, you know, you're skipping the whole deep strike thing. You're not having to wait until turn two to drop something in, and then it has to chill out there. It can't move again or anything. With those Nurglings, specifically, I remember being able to deploy them. Enemy set up fucking long fangs. You know, my opponent had set up long fangs. I set up the Nurglings with the intention to disrupt them, and it worked really well. I got first turn. The Nurglings just went running up into them because they were as close as they possibly could be, and then charged right into them. And they didn't kill them, but they kept them distracted for a good portion of the game. Ended up still losing the game in the long run due to some really mega bad shit rolling on my part and some really lucky rolling on my opponent's part. We both agreed that that was some really exceptionally non-statistical dice play. But, you know, it is what it is. So this is good. What's not so good is that you can only use this strategy once per battle. Rubric Marines are tougher than standard Marines. You know, and they've got some special rules and equipment and stuff. They can be a lot nastier than standard Chaos Marines, that's for sure. But hanging one unit out in the breeze, now, mind you, that could be your intent. Your intent could be get out there, distract the shit out of the enemy for a turn, and call it a loss, you know, from there. That it's totally just a suicide squad mission. Like, that's just it. They're going to go in, they're going to get wiped. You know, mind you, you could deploy them maybe on terrain or out of line of sight. In fact, I would recommend, if you don't know with certainty that you're going first, either due to seizing or because, you know, your opponent is going to finish deployment first and that's the mission rules, he'll be going first, whatever. I would highly recommend, if you're going to use this stratagem, set them up out of line of sight. Otherwise, if you're not going to do that, you know, either you've got first turn or whatever. Well, yeah, if you got first turn or whatever, you could try maybe getting a little risky, but there's still the risk of being seized upon. Otherwise, I was going to say the other thing is, too, obviously you don't have to use the stratagem, but in order to rank its value, you know, how frequently is this stratagem going to be useful to you is a good way to kind of look at the stratagem. Some are very specific situations. They're really powerful, but they're only going to work in certain situations that make sense. Otherwise, they don't do shit. You know, and that's fine, but I do prefer, and I think a lot of people prefer stratagems that can, you know, make changes at critical points in the game without it having to be kind of like the Space Wolf Codex setup, where it's the, you know, you got to do the hokey pokey thing, and, you know, this guy's got to be standing near that guy who needs to be standing up on this high off terrain while it's raining on a Tuesday, bullshit. This isn't Munchkin, this is Warhammer, so we don't need a bunch of really bizarre rules like that, stratagem wise. But still, this is, like I said, this is okay. This could be very, very powerful in, you know, a situation where you've got good terrain to hide in, you've got a good chance of going first, or if you need to make sure that you start off on the right foot. Maybe the mission set lets you score victory points at the end of each turn, not the end of each round. In which case, drop them on an objective, start the game strong. I'm already getting points, you know. There's a lot of different reasons why you would use this, so it is still a good stratagem. that once per battle thing definitely hurts it, though, a lot. Now, I get why, to a degree, this isn't an army meant to be alpha striking up the board. You know, you shouldn't necessarily deploy the whole army 9 inches from the enemy's deployment zone and all their models. But still, it's just, like I said, it's a little touch and go on usefulness. So, now that being said, as somebody, if you're opposing a Thousand Suns army, keep this stratagem in mind, particularly if you have anything that can disrupt enemy deployments and things of that nature, be it the fucking, you know, what are they, the infiltrators and cursors. I don't remember which one. You normally, admittedly, I'll say this much. Normally, I make fun of a bunch of other podcasts to some degree for being like, how can't you keep your Space Marines straight? But it is getting a little fucking ridiculous at this point. But yeah, whatever the squad is that can, the Vanguard Marines that can be in the middle of the field and they can stop anything from getting within 12 inches of them deployment-wise or whatever else, or Deep Strike. Well, admittedly, I don't know if it affects deployment, but I know it affects Deep Strike. But yeah, you know, keep in mind if you got something that can be like a deterrent like that, or even, you know, once again, it does say 9 inches from the enemy deployment zone and any enemy models. So if you want to cover some ground, you may want to deploy your dudes that could be out in the no man's land first, if you can help it, onto critical parts of the field to keep him from dropping Rubric Marines on top of them. So, but once again, it is limited to one unit, so keep that in mind. But yeah, so that's it as far as the preview so far. Once again, they'll probably have some, I'm assuming, tomorrow for the Dark Angels, since, you know, did one yesterday, did one today, but we'll have to see. Before we get into any further stuff, like I said, I do want to discuss a little bit about the Ether War box set, and I got some big news as well. I'm going to take another quick little break. When I come back, we will wrap up the episode, go over the Ether War box set, some interesting stuff I found in it, and that big news. So stay tuned.
You're listening to the Regimental Vox. Follow the Regimental Vox on social media by going to facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast or on Twitter @RegimentalVox. Like what you're hearing? You can help support the show for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/theRegimentalVox today.
Welcome back to the back end of this latest episode of the Regimental Vox. As I mentioned before the break, I wanted to go over a little bit of some interesting stuff I found in the Ether War box set. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Ether War is the latest starter-style box set for Age of Sigmar that's been released. It is for Caradhron Overlords versus Disciples of Tzeentch. What's really cool with this box set specifically is that it's all flying models. The whole thing is flying models. So it includes, for the Overlords, you've got the Endrin Master with the dirigible suit. We've also got some Sky Wardens included. There's the Endrin Riggers and a Grunstock Gun Hauler. Now, I would guess that you can build the Endrin Riggers and Sky Wardens as either or. I haven't taken a close look at the bits, but I'm going to guess that it's just the same multi-part kits that you could purchase. They're just reboxed. So if you want to do two, you know, if you wanted to build six Endrin Riggers instead of 3 and 3, or six Sky Wardens instead of 3 and 3, you can, as far as I'm aware. So, and then we also have the, for the Disciples of Tzeentch, we've got the Magister on Disc of Tzeentch, Zangor Skyfires, Screamers of Tzeentch, and Zangor Enlightened on Discs of Tzeentch. So, like I said, everything in here flies, which is cool, you know, but, you know, that's nice that it's got that. But what's really cool is they actually have some special rules in here for using, for specifically for flying battles. Okay, now there are War Scrolls included in here with pitch battle profiles for them. There's the Intrepid Prospectors for the Caradhron Overlord, and Abhet's Sky Seekers for the Disciples of Tzeentch. We also obviously have the battle plans set up stuff for the actual narrative of, let's see, it's in Shimon, at the Griffin's Eyrie at the heart of the Spiral Crux, as it describes it, is the, you know, location and stuff here. But what's really fucking cool in my mind is they have this this set of rules for stratospheric aerial battle, the Maelstrom of Metal. So this is designed to be used in open and narrative play games. You could try it for match play. I don't know if it would be the best choice for a match play, but this is, like I said, this is some pretty cool shit here. So for starters, with the aerial battles, you can only play exclusively with flying units. Oh, and once again, I want to emphasize before I get any further that this is not just specific to the narrative campaign, the short little narrative campaign that's in this book. It's not specific to Caradhran Overlords and Disciples of Tzeentch. This is for anybody who has flying units available. You can use this exclusively for those. Now, once again, for the purposes of match play, this may not work due to either armies that do not have both flying battle line as well as flying leaders available, because you do require that stuff for match play. But if, as long as you've got flying units, this gives you options here. For open and narrative, once again. So, aerial battles, everything has to fly. For starters, that's a requirement. And then the following rules apply to all aerial battles. We have breakneck speed, which allows you to roll 2d6 instead of d6 when making a run roll for a unit that can fly. So you can zip around a lot faster in these battles, which is really cool. Then we've got fleet of wing. Units that can fly are eligible to fight when they're within 6 inches of an enemy unit and can pile in up to 6 inches. In addition, units that can fly, can retreat, and still charge later in the same turn. So you're looking at a much more aggressive battle here, too. Like, big time, a lot more aggressive. So yeah, those are the rules for aerial battles specifically. Now, they do have rules for this region of war, the Griffin's Eyrie, which is specific to... Well, technically, you could use all of this, once again, in any open or narrative games, but like looking even through like the battle plans here, some of them, all of them, I think, use the region of war rules, and the aerial battles rules, but there's another rule called runaway scenery, which we'll get into in a moment, that's only used on certain missions. So the region of war, the Griffin's Eyrie, for starters, has floating terrain. All terrain features are classed as floating terrain for this battle. Models are not visible to each other if an imaginary straight line 1 millimeter wide drawn between the closest points of the two models crosses over more than 1 inches of a floating terrain feature. So, you know, be it clouds or just pieces of debris that are just flying around and stuff, you know, like, you know, little land bits and stuff, because this place is really fucking crazy once again. In addition, models cannot end any move on floating terrain, so you have to go around the terrain at all the times, too. This makes for a more interesting, you know, movement, and especially since, you know, both armies have shooting models, a more interesting, you know, combat compared to a lot of AOS games where usually, alright, terrain's not that big of a deal. This one definitely has a lot more focus on terrain. And then it does have the command ability, Barrel Roll. You can use this command ability at the start of the enemy shooting phase. If you do so, pick one friendly unit that can fly that's within 10 inches of a friendly hero. Subtract one from hit rolls for attacks that target that unit in that phase. So that's really handy and useful, obviously, to cut down on getting blasted away too badly and stuff, especially with two armies that do have a lot of shooting focus. It definitely, both armies have shooting stuff, but this whole setup is still meant to encourage more close engagements. You know, the ability to run a hell of a lot faster, to get a lot closer, or to escape even. The ability to fight within 6 inches and pile in up to 6 inches. I think it used to be you'd have to be within 3 inches to be eligible to fight and pile them to 3 inches. I would suspect you still have to get within the half inch or whatever it is, at least one model in half an inch, in order to even count as fighting in the first place. If somebody ends a move in some capacity or winds up piling in, as long as they're within 6 inches of somebody else, then next round you could say, yep, I'm part of this fight too now, and drop in. Lastly, they have the runaway scenery rule. Now, this one admittedly is a little weird, in my opinion, the way they have it set up, but let's go over what they got here first. After terrain has been set up, but before setting up their armies, players roll off. The winner of the roll-off must pick a battlefield edge to be the exiting edge. The opposite edge is the oncoming edge. At the start of each battle round, after the first, all models and pieces of terrain on the battlefield must move exactly 6 inches in a straight line directly towards the exiting edge, starting with the models and terrain pieces closest to the exiting edge, which makes sense, so that way you're not dropping stuff on top of each other. You start on the correct end, and, away you go. All models remain in the same configuration after the move as before. So this is going to be kind of the trickier part, too. Once again, this is part of what makes it a little, for match play purposes, not impossible, but you'd have to be very specific. Is you have to go 6 inches exactly, and it has to be in a straight line towards that edge. So you can't reconfigure the layout of that squad as it moves. They've got to be, if this guy was half an inch and like 80 degrees from, we'll do it in clock purposes. If he's, a half inch away at like 11 o'clock from another model, that's where he's got to end up in the long run, at the end of that 6-inch move, too. So it gets a little funky and weird, like I said. Any models that are moved within 1 inch of the exiting edge are slain. So keep that in mind, too, which also makes more reason why you want to use that breakneck speed sort of thing. There may be times, in fact, one of the battle plans starts one of the armies off within 2 inches of the exiting edge. The entire force has to deploy within 2 inches. It's not a very big force. One unit of 3 Screamers of Tzeentch and 1 of 3 Zangor Enlightened. They are starting within 2 inches of that edge. If you don't move them far enough away from that edge, then when that round ends and they do that 6-inch move towards that exiting edge, they're just gone. So the other player, the Carriage on Overlords, he has the one gun hauler and a unit of 3 Sky Wardens. His deployment zone is still a 1 to 2 inch range. And it's also very close to that board edge. Like I said, oh no, I misread this whole, I misread it in the first place. God, I can see why, actually. It's just because of the lighting and the font. It's 12 inches, so there's room. My apologies. Actually, truth be told, it wasn't until I actually flattened it out more and had better light on it that I could see, oh wait, there's no dash there. But in darker lighting, it's not, it looks like 1 to 2 inches. And I was like, that's kind of a weird thing that your deployment zone is variable, but whatever. So anyway, my bad. I fucked up on that, but still, you got to be careful not to get sucked into the exiting edge. Any terrain pieces that are moved within 6 inches of the exiting edge are removed and then placed within 6 inches of the oncoming edge by the player who took the final turn of the previous battle round. So it's like the one cool thing there when you think about it is it's your battlefield is constantly changing and shifting, And two, it's not like your battlefield's going to run out of terrain. You just keep reshuffling it. But you don't have to, when you deploy it on the opposite end, it doesn't specify anything about, you have to make sure it's lined up to the exact orientation and everything else, and the exact placement on the board, relative to how it started. No, you could just, say you got a cloud that's like a 3-inch round, 3-inch diameter cloud that's like, directly in the middle of the battlefield at the beginning, and then it goes off that edge. Well, then when you deploy it on the other side, it can be all the way in one of the corners if you wanted to, or halfway between the middle and the corner. It gives you options. Now, obviously, a game is typically only going to last, you know, 4 to 5 rounds-ish on average. So, you know, terrain that's all the way on the far side, the oncoming edge at the beginning of the game, you're probably not going to end up redeploying it. It's going to get moved throughout the game, but it's not going to get redeployed. But yeah, it makes for some pretty interesting features. That being said, I do think that it'd be kind of cool if they had some sort of, you know, the purpose of this, it even says, the perils of aerial combat intensify significantly when engagements are fought among flying debris and torn landscapes. You know, in my opinion, I think it'd be kind of cool if they had it set up in such a way where it was like, you move the terrain first, then you move your models. So that way, it would be like, okay, well, this terrain piece is going to land on this unit. So any of these guys that are being touched by it, they get nuked. Or maybe they just have to roll off and suffer mortal wounds. That would maybe make more sense. You know, roll off. Anybody who fails suffers, you know, a mortal wound or whatever else. Or you get what I'm getting at. But otherwise, you could just go for total obliteration. If you can't get out of the way of the terrain before it moves, you know, eat shit. You know, like, you're just done. But I think that would make it more perilous, more interesting overall. Otherwise, it's not terribly hard to keep yourself from... You just don't want to never end your turn with any models within 7 inches of the exiting edge. You know, because if they end up within 1 inch of the edge, they're just slain outright. But, you know, without being you can't stop on top of the terrain, but you can, you know, you don't have to necessarily go out of your way to dodge it either. Not the same way anyway. So I think it'd be interesting if you had to dodge the terrain too. Like, that's going to move first, and if you get hit by it, you're slain. Or you have to roll off to be slain. Otherwise, you can dodge out of the way and, you know, you must end within X amount of inches of the terrain. Whatever, you know. You can come up with a lot. Or even if it doesn't necessarily stop on top of them, if it goes through the unit, too. You know, if this piece of terrain would move through a unit, roll off. And if they, you know, if they fail, they get smoked. If they, I got it. Okay, hear me out. I know I'm like totally ADHD train of thought bullshit here, but hear me out. If the piece of terrain moves through the unit, through models, roll a die on a 1, or you can make it more dangerous if you want to do, but we'll say on a 1, that model is slain. However, if the terrain ends on top of said model, there's no roll off. They're just slain. I think that'd be pretty cool. I think that'd be a really cool little piece of it, you know. So that way, you know, if it moves through a squad of 10 guys, say all 10 of them get hit by that terrain piece, but we'll say there's a couple stragglers that you got 2 guys, we'll say, that ended up on top of the terrain piece, technically speaking, when it stops moving. Those 2 models they're just slain, roll off for the rest of the guys that were hit. To see if they get slain in the process, you know. Roll per model, obviously. I think that'd be really cool. Now that I think about it, I think that'd be a really cool way of doing it. And it minimizes you having to, like, you wouldn't have to, like, dance models around the terrain and stuff like that. Like, okay, roll off for this guy, he's good, so I'm going to move him over here. Roll off for the next guy, he's good, I'm going to move him over here. Roll for the next guy. No. If it goes through you, and you roll and survive, cool. If it ends on top of you, there's no rolling. Just remove the model, put the terrain down, be done with it. I think that'd make it more interesting overall. But yeah, I really love the idea of this this Maelstrom of Metal thing. The floating terrain. I love the aerial battles features. I feel like this, once again, makes for a very aggressive game. And I think Runaway Scenery, it's a lot of micromanagey sort of stuff, because you have to move everything 6 inches at the end of the round. Everything goes 6 inches straight, and having to do that with all of your terrain and all of your models. that's going to take a lot of time, especially in, you know, if you're doing just using it for just these battle plans. In fact, let's see here. I think two of the battle plans don't even use the runaway scenery rule. Yeah, two of the battle plans don't even use the runaway scenery rule. Only the one that's got the least amount of models in it actually uses that rule. So it definitely makes makes sense why they limited it, because they're aware that if you got a terrain heavy field, it's going to be a lot of moving shit around. But yeah, I think overall this is, like I said, I think it's a really cool set of rules that I would like to find ways to integrate into more games. So, but yeah, and they've got, obviously this comes with all the War Scroll cards and once again the battalions and stuff like that. Unfortunately, I do not have access right now to either the Caradhran Overlords or Disciples of Tzeentch books, so I can't go into specifics on those right now. Hoping to get my hands on them soon and kind of dig into them, but as of right now, it's not a thing. So, but yeah, as I was saying, though, like I said, I would like to kind of use this for some games and stuff. I'm definitely going to work on building this set up here soon and, have Krista give it a go with me. I think it'd be a lot of fun. Plus, actually, in her case, specifically, if we just wanted to use just these Maelstrom and Metal rules, her whole goddamn army flies. So, yeah, she's like, you know, good to rock and roll there. But that does bring me to my last point to close out the show today. I talk about more games and stuff like that. I've actually partnered up with a local store. For those familiar with the West Michigan area, it's the Gamers Wharf in Granville. I've actually partnered up with them to start running events at their store. Still kind of tentatively working on what the first event's going to be. But I'll give you guys a little preview as far as what I've got going on so far. We are looking at, most likely, first event is going to be February 1st, most likely. And it's going to be it is planned to be an AOS event. So, and I am planning to do it as a team tournament, 2v2. The Gamers Wharf is kind of just starting to work on the Warhammer community. They've been selling Warhammer stuff for a while, and last year they started like a Warcry League and whatnot. One of the other local guys was running the events through their store. But they kind of want to grow the Warhammer community that comes into their store and games in their store. So they have a couple I think they're made by Table of Ultimate Gaming, if I remember correctly. But they have like the official Warhammer licensed tables. They got two of those. But they've got a shit ton of other tables. And then there's a pizza shop that's actually part of the store as well that's got a lot of tables. So there's a lot of space to set up extra stuff if needed. But they're just getting started, so terrain's a little sparse and stuff. General game plan, though, is, like I said, the hope is February 1st to have an event. Once again, planning to probably do a 2v2, probably going to start smaller, focus more on quality over quantity. Once again, just because of the limited terrain and things of that nature, since they're just getting the ball rolling. But the plan is from there, I will probably be down there bi-weekly running some sort of Warhammer-related event or another, be it AOS or 40K. The Gamers Wharf would like to do it on a weekly basis even. They'd like to have very regular Warhammer events come in. My schedule does not permit me to do things on a weekly basis, unfortunately. But I believe that they are still looking for somebody to partner up with. And admittedly, I'm more than happy to find somebody to find somebody on those other weekends to run events. Or not even necessarily that these are my weekends and those are your weekends and we're going to leave it at that. I want to find a partner to work with on that. So now that being said, I am partnering up with my lovely fiance, Krista. you know, I'm partnering up with her. We're actually kind of working together on this whole plot and plan here. It was actually, she's the one who first saw the posting for them looking for people to organize Warhammer events. And as she puts it, it's kind of a power couple type thing. You know, it's something for us to do together. I'm super excited for it, but I think she's just as excited, if not more so even, to get this going. So, but yeah, so keep an eye out on the Regimental Vox Facebook page, as well as the Gamers War Facebook page, the Grand Rapids Wargaming Club Facebook page. I'm going to be, once I've got this event finalized, or at least put together enough that I have something to post, I'll be doing so, and I'll be spreading the word as much as I can. My goal is by the end of this week to have most, if not all, details fully lined up. I've already talked to a few people about potentially borrowing some terrain and things like that, at least for this first event. But once again, the goal is to eventually that this store will have enough terrain to just function in and of itself. But yeah, I'm really excited. This has kind of been a goal of mine for a while. Short-term goal-wise, my goal is to make an event. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. My goal short-term is to make an event that as many people enjoy as possible. That's it. I do not expect everybody to like it. I don't expect everybody to enjoy it. Anybody who shoots for trying to make a tournament or an event that pleases everybody will probably have something that pleases very few to nobody. You're always going to have haters and naysayers. There's always going to be differences of opinion that certain people want this, that, or the other thing. So my goal is to just make something that's enjoyable to as many people as possible. And once again, starting small, I'd rather have a quality event that's got a small amount of people and build towards something bigger than try to overstep the, you know, right off the bat, have, you know, several blank, sparse, crappy looking tables with no organization and stuff to the whole thing. That's not going to be enjoyable for anybody. So, but yeah, I'll be, like I said, that's my short-term goal. Long-term, I do have some plans in the pipe as far as trying to, what I'd like to do is find a way to kind of bring the West Michigan and even beyond possibly gaming community, you know, to kind of connect all these various disparaging communities. Because we've got guys who play in Holland, we got guys who play in, you know, Grand Rapids out on 28th Street. I should say on the far end of 28th Street, like out by the airport, Woodland Mall. There's people at Gamers Wharf, once again, which is on the opposite side of 28th Street, like where it ends on the west side of town, so on and so forth. So, and then we've even got people like up in Greenville. There's like a little spot there. There's people up in the Montague area. There's people down in Kalamazoo. So there's all these little communities, but I'd like to try and come up with a way to unify these communities in some capacity, either by giving them a one-stop shop place where, you know, lots of people, you know, a big event that lots of people are going to want to come from far and wide to attend, or if not that, specifically find a way to create a circuit, basically a tournament circuit that combines multiple locations, multiple gaming communities towards a common goal. So like I said, that's more the long-term looking far out there sort of thing. But yeah, my hope also too is I'd like to do, you know, different varying types of events, narrative and stuff like that as well. And lastly, I'd like to also come up with a way to do some specialist game type of stuff. You know, I've still got Adeptus Titanicus that I really want to crack out. Really want to get my hands on Aeronautica Imperialis sometime soon. So badly. So badly do I want that. But, you know, money's a thing. So, but yeah, having more games like that. The Warcry League I mentioned earlier kind of just quietly drifted apart, it seems. At least I've seen no further events posted for it in a while. I've no idea what's going on with that league anymore, unfortunately. So maybe pick that back up, and I'll, you know, organize and run it if it's a problem of organization purposes. But if nobody's playing it, nobody's playing it. Like, I can't make people play something that they don't want to play. So, but yeah, so that's what I got going on with that. So that was my big news. For those of you who are not super familiar with the Gamers Wharf, but you are in the Grand Rapids or just West Michigan area in general, you want to check out a cool place. The address is 2986 28th Street Southwest, Grandville, Michigan, 49418. They got pretty lengthy hours too, compared to a lot of, stores I've found. They are open every day, 12 to 9, except for Friday and Saturday, it's 12 to 11. So, yeah, it's, pretty cool that, you know, that they have so many, so many hours available, so many days that they're open. A lot of other shops either have shorter hours on Sunday or during the week, they don't open till later and stuff. And as a note, once again, too, they do have a pizza shop attached to it. It's called Pizza on the Wharf. I haven't tried much there yet, but I will say the cheese sticks, they are holy fuck awesome. Just saying. And as a last note, I'm not being paid to say any of this. I legitimately really think that their cheese breadsticks are probably the best fucking cheese breadsticks I've ever had. So, just saying. But yeah, so check that out. You know, check the place out. It's a great place. They got good deals and stuff. And once again, there's definitely a drive to support the community, which is really cool, to see. So, yeah, but keep an eye on my page. Like I said, keep an eye on their page or other West Michigan, wargaming pages. You'll be probably seeing a lot more events being posted from me, for that purpose. So, but I think we're going to call it a call at this point. As always, I want to thank you guys for listening. If you get a chance, you know, review the podcast wherever you're listening to it. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit if you're doing 5-star ratings, 2 thumbs up, or, you know, dancing at the moon, because that's the way your weird podcast system does reviews. I don't know. But just, you know, give me a review. You know, the you know, higher score, the better, obviously. That would be nice. But be honest. I mean, if you really hate this, then you hate it, you know? Although I would prefer, if you're going to be a total hater, just message me on the Facebook page, you know? Facebook.com/TheRegimentalVoxPodcast. You can message me through there. And maybe you're just going to be a dick about it. And I'm going to be like, yeah, well, fuck off, I guess. But maybe you've got some actual useful criticism and stuff, and I'm more than happy to take constructive criticism, you know, not saying that I will use it necessarily, because it depends on whether I agree with it or not, but, still, I'm more than happy to hear what people got to say, and I'm always happy to shoot the shit about, you know, Warhammer and Wargaming stuff, so, by all means. But yeah, facebook.com/TheRegimentalVoxPodcast, you can follow me on Twitter @RegimentalVox. I don't post much there, but it's there. You can, of course, if you get a chance to, if you really enjoy the podcast, want to help me out and help the show grow, support the show, patreon.com/TheRegimentalVox. You know, that every little bit would help, be it $1, $5, $20,000 a month. That's cool, too. If you got that to spare and you think I'm pretty cool, I'm happy to take it. So, but yeah, I definitely want to put out more content, more quality content, get better equipment, be able to get new product faster so that I can review things, more topically. Yeah, you know, like I said, big plans for the future here, both for the podcast and with this whole event organization thing. So, help me out through Patreon would help, keep this podcast going and growing. So. And then, of course, lastly, you got shit you need painted, and you're too goddamn lazy, not talented enough, or just quite frankly, like most of us, time is of the fucking essence, and most of us don't have the time to breathe, let alone, you know, paint, but some of us are crazy enough that we don't sleep much, like me. You can hit myself and my brother up on Facebook, Danger Close Painting Studios. We paint stuff, and we paint it cheap, so at least, generally speaking, I've got pretty happy clients that are happy that they got good stuff and that they didn't pay a shit ton. So, but yeah, that's about it for today, guys. So hopefully, you know, like I said, I'll have some new news on this whole event thing here soon. Keep an eye out for that. Otherwise, I will catch you all on the next episode. So thank you guys for listening. I will catch you all next week. This is Caleb Myers signing off for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.